Hi, it's Beck, and I'm a former high school teacher. Welcome to School of Practice on Edutopia Radio.
I remember my very first year teaching, they had us give out a survey for all the students that was completely anonymous. And one of the questions was, does your teacher care about you as a person?
That's Marcus Luther. He's reflecting on his early days as a high school ELA teacher.
I was feeling, honestly, like year one, I was feeling pretty good. Like we were learning, I could point to the data. I felt like the rapport in the classroom was pretty good for a year one experience. And I remember I saw those results and they were so much lower than I expected. And I was like, I do care about them. Like I was like, I know how I felt, but I had not explicitly done things in the classroom to communicate that.
I'm Kristen Leong, an editor at Edutopia, and I'm also a former middle school teacher. Welcome to a new season of School of Practice. It's that time of year again, teachers, back to school season. And so we are here with a toolkit of research-backed tips and strategies to help you start this new school year strong. First up, getting to know your students. You're going to have a whole new group of kids walking through your classroom doors. Even if you have some familiar faces from last year, they'll be coming to you after a whole summer of growth. While you may be eager to get through the standard early icebreakers and jump into the curriculum, it is really worth it to set aside time to meaningfully get to know your students. A 2019 meta-analysis published in Research Papers in Education reviewed 82 studies on school belonging and found that students who feel personally accepted, respected, included, and supported by others in school are more likely to be motivated to learn and demonstrate more positive behaviors. The same analysis also found that students with a stronger sense of school belonging tend to have higher grades. As today's guest, Marcus Luther, will share, part of fostering that sense of connection and belonging is showing students right from the start that their opinions and experiences matter, and that they'll have a say in the learning process. Marcus is a high school English teacher in Oregon who has almost 15 years of experience in the classroom. In this first episode in our Back to School Toolkit, he'll share one terrific way to get to know your students in the very first week of school and explain how it sets the tone for the year ahead. And then we'll learn about two simple strategies to collect and implement feedback from students throughout the year so you can continue to build belonging and engagement. Let's dive in. Marcus, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Marcus, what is your elevator pitch to busy teachers about the importance of jumpstarting community in the classroom from the very first week of school?
My quickest pitch to this is that we do so much work as teachers from a curriculum standpoint to plan backwards from they need to learn this by this assessment, and we don't necessarily spend nearly as much time planning backwards from classroom culture and community. Even though all of us know that when classroom and community is good, then all the other stuff, it's a rising tide. So you having good rapport and trust and understanding of your students will open the doors to not just like better results, those matter, but also just like you're going to enjoy yourself more in the classroom. And I also think, what is better to prioritize your time than getting to understand your students for 30 minutes?
Planning backwards from classroom culture and community. I love this idea. You have some great targeted tools around collecting student feedback to help foster a sense of belonging for students. Let's start with your first strategy. During the very first week of school, intro surveys are often popular, but depending on the format and the number of questions, those can become unwieldy for teachers to actually review. Enter your index card survey. What's the overarching goal of this strategy?
The goal for me is first to correct mistakes from earlier in my career when I'd have 50 plus questions and 100 plus students. And there's no way I was reading those in a timely manner, if at all, quite honestly, in those early years. And so to narrow and to signal my priority and say, like, this is what matters most for me. And to do it in a way where I can read every single answer before the student walks back in the next day. I also love that it's so easy to turn around and show them the results the very next day, which again, that's building that trust with students. You're saying, not only did I read through these, I can show you the results and what I got from them. And you can start building that relationship and rapport early on.
And Marcus, just to clarify for listeners, you're using actual index cards, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't want to start off the year on screens. In a lot of schools, mine included, we have to like walk them down and check out their devices. So planning a technology-related activity on day one is usually a poor move as a teacher, in my experience. So it is an actual index card. It's simple. It's a very easy resource to get like a stack of index cards. It's something I can flip through very accessibly for myself. So like I usually go hard copy. I'm sure there are more technology-minded folks than me who can be successful with that. It's just not my, I don't like that to be the opening.
Okay, this is a perfect segue, Marcus. Let's run through each of the five questions on the index card survey one by one. And for teachers listening, we're going to link to this list of questions in the show notes as well. Okay, Marcus, you ready? Starting from the top, what's the first question?
Question number one is, I would say like, is the foundation of this activity, which is what is your top value and why? And I always ask them values that you personally strive for, or you feel like are reflective of your own actions and choices in life. I've got a list of 50-ish values and we go through them about 12 at a time. And I tell them that you can add your own. Like this is not by no means an exclusive list. Once they have their 8, we then play the fun game of, okay, get rid of 3 of those values and then get rid of 2 of those values. And it's a very fun moment because having done this many times, you see students react to this so predictably where they get so infuriated. Like you can see like the grimaces, but they're narrowing down to their top 3. And then I have them circle their number 1 just so they don't cross out number 2 or number 3, which feels a little harsh. So the goal is they end the activity by getting their top value. And then the follow-up to this is when we flip the index card over and they actually write down their top value. And what I've shifted towards in recent years, why is it your top value? Because you could have 7 kids say respect for 7 different reasons. And I try to name to them, just because someone has the same top line value doesn't mean that they feel the same way about it. So having them explain what their value is with that, one, that's scaffolding in the sense of when I then ask them to share with each other, it's written out already. But two, I get to understand why they chose that word.
Okay, so the first question, what is your top value and why? This feels like a really fresh way to get to know your students' value systems and also have them do some introspective thinking. Marcus, walk us through the second question on the index card.
Question two is one that I think has to be delivered intentionally. It is, what has been your experience with school up to this point? And I actually have them attach a numerical value to this from 1 to 7. 7 being like, it's been an incredible, super supported experience where I feel successful, all the way to 1, which would be the opposite side of that. And I name at the front end, you're not going to share this with anyone. We're not going to raise our hands and say what our numbers are. I just want to know your number. And it's a way of me acknowledging that different students walk into the room with very different numbers. And for me, what I'm already thinking about is how I'm going to share this back to them. So then what I'll do is I will get the numbers and make a slide for the next time they walk into the classroom. And I'm able to say, hey, this many students across all the sections, not just this section, said 7. And then 6 and 5, so that if you're that student who said a 7 or a 1, you say, oh, there's others of me. But more importantly, I think if you're that student who very quickly said, oh yeah, school is great, it's 6 or 7, they're gonna see that, oh, there are some 1s and 2s and 3s in this room. So I love this question, first and foremost, for acknowledging the different experiences students have come into the classroom with, including adverse or negative experiences with education, but also because it foreshadows what I care about so much is that for students to really value different lived experiences and perspectives and why they matter in our classroom.
Marcus, what kinds of adaptations would you recommend for teachers of younger students?
I think the easiest one early on is to say, okay, less can be more. Like you don't need to have all these values. You can maybe change the diction level of the value words or simplify some or provide definitions. And I think the question where you ask them about what their school experience has been walking in might be a little bit, like I might articulate that one a little bit differently. You could even have them like draw an emoji that best represents how they felt most days in school last year. It still kind of gives you the same information as a teacher too.
Okay, so far we have a better understanding of students' values and experiences. This can give teachers some insights into where students are coming from in terms of their perspective as they start this new school year. For your third question on the index card survey, what are you asking?
Okay, question three, what matters most to you from a classroom and teacher? And I'll fully acknowledge you could adjust this to your own classroom. I get a little alliterative with this one, with the six C's. So I think the words that I've been offering in recent years are consistency, change, challenge, compassion, clarity, and creativity. You can feel free to mix that up. But why I like this one is that I feel like this is a very discussable one. These are all positive things. It's a great conversation in the classroom to say, okay, raise your hand if you said this one, raise your hand if you said this one, so they can visually see other people raising their hands and talk about with their group members or shoulder partners why that word matters the most to them.
I like how for this one, you have narrowed down the options for students to choose from. Does the same answer usually rise to the top each year?
In the most recent year, my sophomores had a massive spike in wanting consistency. So consistency mattered to them way more this year than the previous year's students in that case. And actually, compassion went down. That does not mean that I was like, okay, I'm going to not be compassionate anymore. But I think it helps me get an early head start of like, okay, this group, this is what they really need.
That's really interesting. It's almost like a vibe check with the whole class about what matters most to them from the classroom and the teacher. Okay, take us through number four.
Number four is, what is an interesting or boring fact about yourself? And I got it from Kyle Nemus. He posted online about this. And I think in the past, it'd be like, oh, what's an interesting fact? By giving the permission structure of a boring fact, it takes the pressure way down so the kids can step into whatever level of risk and sharing they want to. And then we use this as like such a great tool later on. It can be a get up out of your seats and find out three facts about others. It can be just sharing with shoulder partners. When I print out rosters for them to tape into their spirals to get to know each other better, it's got their names, it's got their top values, it also has their interesting or boring fact about each other, which is always a fun when they get to see the full spreadsheet of that.
Marcus, I know some of those boring facts must have stuck in your mind. Can you think of some funny or surprising ones that students have shared?
Oh, like students will say all sorts of things with this, like some massive injury they had at a young age. It could be they met this famous person. You get the full, especially like I had one student say like it was something about getting like suspended for some illicit behavior. And I had to go confirm with them, like, are you okay with this being printed out on every student roster? And they're like, okay. I'm like, okay, I'm going to trust you. So you can get a whole smorgasbord of different facts, but you also get a lot of like, I have one brother, or I like to listen to music. And that's fine too, because that student might be super nervous just to be back in school in the first place. And that's our first step in a long journey.
So this kind of like interesting or boring fact that students share can give teachers like a subtle but solid heads up about like how guarded that child is.
Yeah.
Okay, take us through number five.
Last one's 100% optional. Here's the question. What is helpful for me to know to better support you right away in this classroom? And I really am intentional about how I word this and present this, in that I think it's a mistake to ask students to share too much day one, or really at any time, of saying, hey, just tell me something really important about you. Like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to follow up on that with the right support, depending on what they say. And I feel like it's really important to create the conditions or the framing around it. And then part of that is, let me give you some examples of some things. It could be, hey, this is where I need to sit in the classroom to be successful. Or this is the type of thing that I've really struggled with in past years as a student. Or these are the pronouns I use. Or I really am involved in these sports or activities and really passionate about them. So I list all those examples, and almost every student fills something out. And then I've got this information that I can have day two. And I think if this was a 50-question survey, it might take me a while to see all these results. But on an index card, sometimes students will say something like, literally, like, I can't see the board from where I'm sitting. I can fix that tomorrow, right? And I get that information. I can be responsive right away. And for a lot of things, it gives students space to advocate for themselves. And I want that to be a value in our classroom too. And I'm making it a low lift, optional way to do so.
What do you do in a situation where a student shares something that maybe goes beyond the scope of your classroom?
That's where I've gotten much better in my career of like, hey, this isn't me trying to solve this on my own. Walk down to the counseling office, talk to other people and get people on board. I think on the front end, like I try to frame the way I present to it, saying, hey, this is specifically about what is happening in this classroom in terms of like me supporting you in this classroom. And then I think giving the examples helps. And by the way, I'm not trying to say like students shouldn't share something important, but it's a rare student who's going to share something that's like reportable if you frame it correctly.
Okay, so immediate classroom supports, that is your last question on the index card, and it is completely optional. So when do you offer this survey to your students? Is this literally a day one activity for your class?
I mix it up day one versus day two, just so that day one, I see all my students. And if I did the same thing, all six sections, it would be a little bit rough because I'm also trying to turn around the survey information, put it on slides the next day. So it's very early on.
And students are completing the survey in class. How long do you give students to answer all of the questions?
It depends on the day, but usually I have between 30 to 40 minutes on that first day. That's for me enough time to get through all of it, including bringing the discussions in. I feel like if you took out all the discussions, it's probably more in like the 20 minute range.
The flexibility of the survey is so great. After the break, we are going to learn about two low-lift strategies to keep feedback collection going throughout the school year. And we'll talk about how to navigate getting that inevitable, tough feedback from students. You don't want to miss it. We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Andrea from the Edutopia team. You know those moments when a lesson just doesn't land and you need advice, or when something clicks and you want to tell another teacher about it? How about when you quickly need a resource that's already worked in another classroom? It's all happening every day on Teacher to Teacher, Edutopia's new community space. The only thing missing is you. Head to edutopia.org/teacher-to-teacher to join us.
Okay, we are back with high school teacher Marcus Luther. Marcus, we just talked through how to use a simple index card survey to get to know students during the first few days of school. Now we're going to move on from that initial week and talk about how to extend feedback practices with your students throughout the year. The idea here is that teachers have the opportunity to continue building classroom belonging and culture all year long. You have two simple strategies that I want to focus on. Let's dive into the first, a pacing check-in. About 1 month into the school year, you ask students a simple question. How has the pacing of this class been so far? Marcus, what is your thinking behind this quick survey?
I think the classroom needs to be responsive to how students are doing. And me asking that question gives me better information. And honestly, it also helps separate which students is this going too slow for versus which are we going too fast for. A survey like that, I probably wouldn't do anonymously because I would want to know who said what. And I would be transparent with them on the front end about that. For some students, it's going too fast because they're struggling with attendance and they're missing a lot of school for lots of different reasons, including very valid reasons, right? But like if the class is going too fast because of that, that's a very different thing than, oh, this student is here all the time. They're trying their hardest and it still feels like they're going too fast. What academic supports do I need to provide to the student so that they can be successful? So I think nuancing that data to the individual level with students is really, really helpful. Data and feedback can help you be better as a teacher. I know that takes capacity, but for me, I would always rather know more about how students feel about their learning than not know.
So you do this quick pacing check-in 1 month into the school year, and then you also occasionally roll this question into your second survey, a monthly pulse check. Tell me what this pulse check looks like.
So about once a month, we do this survey. It's from Jim Mayers. We call it a pulse check, where you basically say, okay, 1 to 7, how is this class going? And then what's a word that best describes your lived experience in the classroom? So I have a list of 20 words. It's kind of like 10 positive, 10 negative-ish. And then I also ask them, 1 to 7, how are the rest of your classes going? And that's kind of my baseline, right? Because if a kid says a 2 for my class, but then they say a 2 for their other classes, that feels a little different for me than a 2 for my class and a 6 for their other classes. I'm like, oh, I got something I got to fix.
Okay, so just 3 short questions. You do this pulse check about once a month throughout the rest of the year. Marcus, are students putting their names on these and how are you collecting the answers?
Those are anonymous surveys and that's a template. Like I just copy and paste the Google form. It's a quick 5 minute, hey, hop on our LMS Canvas, fill it out. we're going to move on to our next thing. I share the results the next day. It doesn't take a lot of prep work. It does take a little bit of emotional work in the sense of when you see those results and they aren't the most positive, it's not easy all the time. But over years, I can kind of almost know the pattern in advance because I have that survey data that says, hey, when we hit February and March and April, their stress levels go up and their experience across school, not just my class, goes way down. What adjustments can I make on my end to kind of lean into that and make it a better experience for them?
We will link to your monthly survey in the show notes as well so teachers can review them. I was thinking about something you said about the work on teachers' end of receiving perhaps some critical feedback from students. You know, I'm thinking, of course, about our new teachers especially. It kind of takes a little while to develop that thick teacher skin. Do you have advice for listeners who are like worried about feeling a little sensitive to some critical feedback from students?
I think that it's 100% fair to be concerned about doing this when things are not going well, because there's so many things you cannot control as a teacher. If you get a really difficult class with a ton of students in it, like that's going to be a different lived experience for you, and that's outside of your control. So I think, first off, I just want to affirm, it's a lot easier for me to give these surveys as year 14, year 15 next year teacher who feels very confident in what I'm doing, versus early year teachers. So that's without question a thing. But what I will tell you is that I've got feedback from students, including I'm going to direct quote one from the end of this last year saying, thank you for giving surveys as frequently as you do. This is something that doesn't always happen in other classes and it means a lot to us. And this is from a student who was in a class that wasn't always like positive results. But I think even when the results are negative, the signal you're sending to your students is that I value your voice and I'm going to adjust as much as I can. And I think going in, you need to know you're going to get negative results. I feel great about what I'm doing as a teacher. I get ones and twos sometimes from students, and that happens, and it's totally fine. It's this anonymous one or two. And even if the results are great, I walk out of school some days and sometimes I'm like, I wonder who that one or two was. Like, that's normal. But if you're having a really tough week, like, wait till the next week or something. So make sure you're in a good spot to read the feedback for sure.
In closing, I want to circle back to the benefits of setting up a feedback practice from the very first week of school. Why do you think this really matters?
Having opportunities to get to understand students, to get to see how they understand themselves as learners, has without question raised the ceiling, but also the floor of the classroom for so many students. And I think it's something that pays off 1,000 times over. I can think back to the before and after moment in my career when I started doing this more often, and it's a game changer for my lived experience selfishly as a teacher. Like, I enjoy the work more, and it's a better classroom for students.
Marcus, it's been so wonderful talking with you today.
Thank you for having me on.
Here are three things I'm taking away from this conversation. One, the first week of school is the perfect time for a brief intro survey that students will actually fill out. Keeping these surveys short and low-tech means that teachers can quickly and easily review them and start building belonging from the get-go. Two, a simple year-round feedback practice like the pulse check allows you to regularly touch base with students about how they're managing things like workload and pacing. These quick surveys make it easy to adjust lessons as you go. For Marcus, these monthly checks also inform how he plans his classes the following year. And three, plan to gather feedback when you feel you have the bandwidth for it. There is no need to schedule surveys when you know your students are overwhelmed. And yes, it is true for even the most beloved teachers. Sometimes you'll get negative feedback, and that's okay. The point, Marcus says, is that you're showing students that their opinions and experiences matter. And that's going to make a huge positive difference in your classroom all year long. Special thanks to teacher Marcus Luther. His feedback survey and Edutopia articles about these strategies will be linked in the show notes. If you liked this episode, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave us a rating and a review. This helps others find our show. This episode was produced by Anne Margaret Warner and edited by me. Our engineer is Doug Keeley, and our supervising editors are Sarah Gonser and Steve Merrill. I'm Kristen Leong. We'll see you again soon with another great episode to help you get ready for the classroom after summer break. See you soon.